It's lovely to be here and see so many old friends. Nice to be here with you. This is the third topic that tonight we'll be taking up of our fall practice period. The first topic we took up was the four contemplations as outlined in the Sutra on the White-Clad Disciple, which is one of the sutras that we're studying as part of this practice period. The four contemplations are refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and in the Sangha, and in the precepts, or the mindfulness trainings. And the second topic we took up was the first mindfulness training, the first precept. Tonight we'll take up the second precept. The precepts are both safe harbor, a place to stand secure, held, protected. And they're also the current, the stream, the way forward, the path. They express the universal law of cause and effect. Our teacher, Thay Thich Nhat Hanh, always says, this is because that is. And by the choices we make in our life, we give meaning to our lives. And that precepts then are the expression of that meaning. We are, of course, completely free. And yet we create our lives through our choices, and the precepts help us to make wise choices, choices that bring happiness to our lives, and choices that help us to touch what is deep and true and universal. I know all of us here tonight are here practicing because we want to know something about the truth of our lives, the truth of existence. And we always come to meditation with a question. It's always that question that brings us to Sangha. That wanting to understand something more deeply than just the everydayness of getting up and brushing our teeth and having breakfast and going to work. And so we come, you know, wondering, well, what is the Buddha? What is Dharma? What is the meaning of this? And we find that bit by bit we are completely free. And the meaning is in our choices. The meaning is what we make of our lives. And to have a path that supports us in touching universal truths is a great gift. So the first mindfulness training, the first precept, says, aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I vow to cultivate compassion. And it asks us then to contemplate, to meditate, to reflect upon really deeply what destruction of life is. And the second mindfulness training is aware of the suffering caused by stealing and oppression. I vow to cultivate and practice generosity. So we're looking at the precepts in four different lights. We're beginning with the original statement of the precept, which is simply Do not steal, nourish generosity. And it asks us to contemplate what is stealing. I mean, most of us feel like, well, you know, we don't take things from other people. We don't take what doesn't belong to us. We respect other people's ownership. And so, what is the deeper meaning here of do not steal? I mean, at the very surface, we can see this is something that's pretty easily practiced. But then the second part of it is nourish generosity. Then we can begin to look inward to see, you know, what is generosity? What is the generosity of our heart? What is the generosity of our mind? And the second, you know, iteration of the precept comes from the Sutra of the White-Clad Disciple. And it says, lay students of the Buddha, refrain from taking what has not been given. Put an end to taking what has not been given. They find joy in being generous without expecting anything in return. Their minds are not obscured by greed or craving. They constantly guard their own honesty and uproot from within themselves any intention to take what has not been given. In this way, lay students of the Buddha study and practice the second of the five precepts. So this begins to take us into a little deeper territory, I think, of what is our intention and what is our mind doing. I believe the foundation of a spiritual practice and a spiritual path is the second sentence of this precept. Lay students find joy in being generous without expecting anything in return. And that is very much a practice. It is a practice that eradicates jealousy. Because when somebody else has something wonderful or does something wonderful or is recognized for something they've done, we rejoice with them. And we don't rejoice with them so they'll like us or so that they'll invite us to their next party or that we'll be recognized because they're recognized. We don't rejoice for any reason other than our own open and generous heart. And initially, you know, it's very much a practice of paying attention to our minds and knowing when we feel resentful, when we feel jealous, when we feel needy in our own lives. And then remembering these words of where is the generosity in my own heart? How do I feel generous here? When we think of ourselves, you know, as just small, separate, individual selves, it's very hard not to want things for ourselves. And it's very hard to give without wanting something back. And so the next reiteration of the precept, which is the mindfulness training that Thay wrote, says that we okay. I will practice looking deeply to see that the happiness and suffering of others are not separate from my own happiness and suffering, that true happiness is not possible without understanding and compassion. So we're being asked to look more deeply into what's true about existence. And when we look really carefully, when we look realistically and honestly, not just about what I want or what I need or how things should be in order to be okay for me, but what is really true here in the universe, we see that the universe itself is generous. The universe gives us what we need to be alive. The universe has given us our lives. Somehow, mysteriously, we have appeared. And everything that our body needs to continue, air, water, food, friendship, love, beauty, is freely given. And we are somehow part of that generosity, that natural generosity of the universe, that we aren't separate from it, that our very bones and blood and marrow and cells are made up of what the universe gives freely every moment. Our atoms are made up of the dust of stars and truly shine in the same way, are illuminated in the same way. When we're able to touch that natural generosity of the universe, what is true about our lives, then it's much easier to recognize our own generosity. And to know that there's something true about us, that we are, at base, generous. And such a beautiful build. We are at base generous. We are, our true nature is nature of generosity. You know, sometimes when we're paying attention to our mind, which is what our mindfulness is asking us to do, what our practice asks us to do all the time, is to be mindful, is to know what's going on. And when we find ourselves feeling resentful, the generous response naturally is, ah, here is a resentful Buddha. And when we find ourselves feeling lonely or cut off or separate, it's like, ah, here's a Buddha of loneliness. And when we find ourselves taking joy in the joy of someone else, it's like, ah, here's a joyous Buddha. I remember reading this story a long, long time ago, and I don't know why it comes up with this particular precept, but it's when John Lennon first met Yoko Ono. She was having an art exhibit in London, and he happened to stumble into the art exhibit, and there was this ladder that he walked up, and at the very top of the ladder there was like a little telescope, and he walked all the way to the top of the ladder, and he knew when he looked through the telescope he was going to see something, and he didn't know what he was going to see, and he sort of had this sense of trepidation, but he looked through the telescope, and there was the word yes, and he thought, I like this woman. And that was the beginning of their relationship. There is a necessity of saying yes to all that is. When Jesus Christ said, suffer the little children to come unto me, that word, that the context of that word suffer was to permit, to allow. And the first and deepest act of generosity is to accept ourselves just as we are, to allow ourselves in each moment just to be who we are, and to acknowledge it, to be mindful. Without that recognition, there is no possibility for the next part of generosity, which is generativeness, to arise, for our practice to be generative. And the precepts very much are about action in the world. They are very much about how we step forth in the world. And so this being generous allows us to be generative, allows us to step forth to greet the world as it is. And that it's very much an act of creativity. It is very generative because each moment is brand new. And if we're living by rules and saying, you know, this is how it is, and I always react this way to this, rather than saying, this is how it is, here's how I'm reacting, what's new? What's the next moment? Then there can be movement. Then out of that place of open-heartedness, we can step forth. And it's generative. This morning I was watching a spider build a web. And, you know, in the fall, how many spiders there are, they're all building their webs. And on those wonderful frosty mornings, or the mornings where there's a lot of dew, how they're, you know, they stand out because they're covered in dew. And, so I was watching the spider. It was quite a large spider, beautifully producing this web, and all eight legs were in motion. I mean, it was just like this incredible dance that was happening. And I was thinking how incredible it is that, you know, our lives are generative. All life is generative. We are producing. And that is very much an act of generosity. The work that we are given in our lives, that we have taken up in our lives, is very much an act of generosity. That we get up in the morning, brush our teeth, eat breakfast, and go to work. And then give ourselves fully to the work at hand is an act of generosity. To cherish, respect, and honor ourselves in that place of productivity, whatever it is an act of generosity. I remember reading this story about an old man who had retired from work, and he decided to become a guard for school crossings. And he said every morning he got up and he put on his red vest with the reflectors on it, and he walked to the corner where he was to stop traffic. And he said every morning he put himself fully into putting that flag out and stopping the traffic. And he was protecting the children. With his whole being, he was protecting the children. And he felt great joy, great happiness, and great meaning in his life. I think this is the meaning of this precept, not to steal. Is to give ourselves completely to each act with our full open-heartedness. And in that way, really stepping forth as the Buddha. Full presence, fully awake. Mindfulness training goes on to say, running after wealth, fame, power, and sensual pleasure can bring much suffering and despair. I am aware that happiness depends on my mental attitude and not on external conditions. And we live in a world and in a society that encourages us to be looking outside of ourselves for our sense of fulfillment and meaning and joy or happiness. That, you know, the ads are in magazines and in on the TV are always telling us if we just were more sexy, or if we were just owned a nicer car, or if we just had more money, then we would be okay, then our lives would be okay, and we'd have what we needed. But it's important to look into again. To look deeply into the truth of that, that really fame, wealth, sensual pleasures aren't what give us a sense of meaning or joy in our lives or happiness. But that true contentment comes from our own hearts, our own valuing our lives. And our tendency is to value the things that we think are good in our lives and to push away the things we think we don't want. But this precept very much says is, you know, to give ourselves to everything without any expectation of it being different. I have a friend who had a son who, when he was growing up, started having a lot of problems. He started running with a bad crowd. And my friend was really worried that his son was going to get lost. Confusion. And it was at a time of life when his son was out of the house and really he had no say over what he was doing with his life. And so he said he began to worry a lot and fret a lot and be upset a lot, and when his son would call, they'd have a fight, and then his son said, I don't want to talk to you anymore, and, you know, it just was becoming this sort of untenable situation, and he found himself, it was like this low-level worry that was covering everything in his life. And he decided what he would do would be every time he thought of his son, he would come back to himself. He would recognize his worry, his fear, his sadness, his disappointment. And he'd let that Buddha nature hold it. His own Buddha nature hold it. And he said, what started coming up was that the fear, the disappointment began leaving him, and he would touch instead love. Just naturally what arose was a sense of love for his son. And so he started practicing with that, that whenever he was aware of his fear, his anger, his disappointment, he'd breathe in, he'd breathe out. He'd smile to himself, and he'd surround his son with love. He said initially he didn't think it was making much difference in his son's life, but it started really making a lot of difference in his life. He started feeling a lot more ease, a lot more acceptance, and a lot more realization that no matter what his son did, he would love him. No matter what happened, he would always love him. And he said that they began to be able to have conversations where he was able to just listen to his son. And he started hearing his son say, you know, some of these kids I'm hanging out with aren't so good. You know, I kind of don't like what they're doing. And he's going, oh. He didn't say, oh, I told you so. Although sometimes he said he thought it. And he said what happened was, you know, he began to, a connection began to be formed between him and his son again. And he continued to practice like that. And he said, indeed, his son continued to stumble and make a lot of mistakes. But the bit by bit, it was like what he had learned growing up in the family began to shine through bit by bit. He said, but the thing he told me that was the most important thing was that he realized that his love for his son was unconditional. And that that was an act of great generosity. And it turned out that that generosity wasn't about his son or about him, because the generosity held both of them. When he touched that love in his own heart, he felt generous to himself. He felt embraced by the generosity of the universe. And his son also was embraced in that same generosity. So this mindfulness training is asking us to look at what really does make us happy. What really makes, gives meaning to our lives. And in order to do that, we really need to be able to pay attention to not only what's going on in our mind, but then the deeper questions that arise from that. How am I able to be generous in the face of my own suffering? How am I able to be generous in the face of someone else's suffering? And it's a practice. And it's a practice because there is no absolute answer, but only the arising of each moment with our response. And it helps to remember that at the base, we are involved, we are a product of, we are a perfect expression of a generous universe. And that in some ways, we can never be separate from that. That always the universe is expressing itself through us. Even though our mind might be caught in our own thinking of separation, of anxiety, of despair, the universe nevertheless is still pouring herself forth to support us and maintain us. And there's something about that that's really important with the precepts, and that is that when we act and make choices that are in line with that universal truth of the generosity of the universe, then create a life that is full of happiness. So I ask you, you know, in practicing with this, to look into that in your own lives, into your own mind and into your own heart. So part of our practice period is keeping a journal. And it's nice each evening to reflect upon the day. This next week we'll be taking up the study and the practice and reflection upon the second mindfulness training, and to read through it, and then let it be like a mirror or that reflects what's happened through our day. Every day to spend a little bit of time particularly with this and see how it has manifest. Pay attention to it. It's living, its embodiment in our own lives. The last point I think that's really important about all of the mindfulness trainings, as Thay has written them, as Asanga has written them, is that they ask us also to reflect upon how our actions live in the world, how they affect the whole world. So in this mindfulness training on true happiness, it says aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing and oppression. I am committed to practicing generosity in my thinking, speaking, and acting. I constantly am aware of uprooting any intention in myself of taking what is not given, what has not been given. So, in my thinking, my speaking, and my acting, how do my actions reflect in the universe with social injustice, oppression, exploitation? And how do those relate to giving without any expectation for return? And I want to leave you with those as questions to be reflecting on this week. Not as a way of self-judgment, not as a way of putting yourself out of your own heart or anyone else for that matter, not as a basis for rules, shoulds, but as a basis for thinking about the way the world is, the way we are in the world, and ways to have generosity be act of generativeness in the world, of creating, sharing, and spreading love. So I want to take a little bit of time for questions. I know some people here haven't been doing the practice period, but so you might have some questions, or those of you who are doing the practice period might have some questions as well. If you have been doing the practice period and you signed up for the emails, you'll be getting information in the email. And I guess my first question for you is, everybody receiving that? There was a sign-up sheet last two weeks ago.
Yeah, and last week it was out.
Yeah.
And it's also available in the kitchen.
Okay.
If you want to receive those, fill it out.
Okay. Is there anyone who's filled that out who's not receiving it?
This week there was nothing that came, at least as far as I know.
Nothing new.
Yeah, right. So, you've got the first two topics up. Yeah, so this is the third topic this week. And next week there won't be something new either.
But the second preset questions weren't in mind yet.
They'll be coming this week. Yeah, it's after the talk. Okay. Okay. So, any questions?
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot, the whole issue of generosity and just sort of how the universe is set up. It appears to me that the universe is set up both to support us in life, but part of life is also death and that whole cycle. But then sometimes I get concerned that maybe this inequity that we see in the world is really part of the universe. It's part of the way the system works.
The inequity.
Mm-hmm. And the oppression. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd just be interested to hear what you think about that area. There's just so many things that seem just really unjust and wrong in the world and ungenerous. But I don't know. Maybe that's just part of the universe. Maybe that is part of it.
A really good question, and it is really the foundation, I think, of practice. That particular question is what brings us to practice. How do we permit the suffering? How does the suffering be transformed and liberating at the same time? And, you know, the first place we find it is in our own hearts and minds. That's the first answer we find, and ultimately, that's where all the answers have to come from, is from within ourselves. That if we are looking outside of ourselves as something separate, and different than how our own consciousness and our own mind works than we see what is outside of ourselves as suffering. When we're able to, you know, accept it and let it be part of exactly of who we are. I mean, just read it completely as it is. It ceases to be suffering. It ceases to be a place where transformation can happen. So when we... when we are aware in ourselves of something happening that we're judging, we say, this is really wrong, I don't like this. And we know that is true at one level, but we also want to practice with it. And so we come back to ourselves and we hold it really gently. And we ask ourselves this question, how do I understand this? And the question is really important. It's really important, how do I understand this? And then we come back, not getting lost in the separation, which is the suffering, not getting lost in that's outside of me, that's something else. But coming back and letting go of this idea of ourselves as separate from anything, so that we don't have thoughts about it, but we are experiencing what's right here. So we experience the cool breezes. We experience the beauty of flowers. We experience our gratitude at tasting fresh water. And we continue to practice like that, completely focused and concentrated, and at one point, self and other fall away. All sense of the suffering being outside of ourselves falls away. And in that place, a deep well of compassion arises. And it is that compassion, knowing that we aren't separate from anything and we never will be, that allows us to step forth in a way that transforms what's right in front of us, what's part of us. And, you know, the only understanding of that comes from when self and other fall away completely. And that is when we see that we are the Buddha mind, that everything is held in love, even the suffering. And the suffering is the gift because it is the basis for which transformation happens. Tayo says there's no lotus without mud. If there weren't suffering, if there weren't difficulty in the world, it wouldn't be possible to be looking so deeply to see holds everything. What is the truth that holds everything? So there's that place where there's absolutely no separation at all. It is a complete allowing, complete permitting. And then everything that arises is generosity, and it is that place of unconditional love, of no separation. And the response from that is compassion. And we see that that compassion is what heals in the world. And, you know, it is moment by moment. And so we want to say, oh, that compassion, I'll always feel that compassion, I'll always be able to manifest it. But, you know, in fact, everything is constantly changing and constantly moving. And so our practice is, you know, to constantly be coming back and having that Buddha mind, that profound acceptance, that deep compassion, arise anew over and over again. And that is the Four Noble Truths. It is the truth that there is suffering, and that suffering has causes. And because it has causes, there is a way of healing. And that healing is a way of, is the Buddha mind, is the stepping forth through compassion. That is the great insight that these precepts arise out of. It's why we say, you know, I vow to cultivate generosity. And the way we cultivate generosity is by letting the letting ourselves know that what is most true about ourselves. And what is most true, what brings us the most happiness, is when we indeed feel generous towards what is right in front of us in this moment. We live in the exact same moment in this world of separation, which is the world of suffering, which is the world of sin. You know, the root of sin is separation. And at the same time, we live at the exact same moment, we live in that world of utter, complete generosity and non-separation. That everything is always transforming itself into our lives, into your life, into newness. And that in that, there's nothing to hold on to. Nothing that is separate. So it's within the suffering that the flower blooms. And to find that truth in our own hearts, in our own lives, by practicing the mindfulness training Zen, it begins to make sense. And so that when we see, when we're looking with the eyes of separation, of self and other, and we see the real exploitation, the real social injustice, the real oppression in the world, we're not afraid of it at all. We're not thrown off by it at all. Our heart immediately turns to that compassion as a way of holding it, responding to it, and in healing it. So when I started out this talk, I said the precepts are both the harbor, the place to stand in the midst of impermanence, and they're also the way to move forward. There's a very beautiful expression that they are the harbor and the weir. They are the passage, and they are the stillness. And so they express both those minds of the separation and the mind of a universal understanding. What is most true of us, our ultimate nature.
Did you say the harbor and the weir? W-E-I-R.
The way through, the way we move, and the place to stand still at the same time.
Yes. I think one of the hardest things is to apply it to myself. Mm-hmm. It's easier to have compassion for others, but how to generate that feeling towards ourselves when we're not living up to whatever we think we're supposed to live up, you know, that our own expectations, our own family, how we want to be with them, and then we're not. And just those constant day-to-day things that are hard to...
So part of it is remembering that you are more than your expectations. You can come back and say, oh, here's a Buddha of expectation. and touch that, that heart of perfection, even in the expectation. But it is coming back to yourself always and finding that place of standing with yourself. Because truly, if you can't offer compassion to yourself, you can't offer it to anyone else. If you don't know compassion for yourself, then it's always about separation. So finding that heart of generosity, you know, where you say yes to yourself, wherever you are, just right there. That gentling of the judging mind. And part of it is letting go of our ideas too, you know, of like how we're supposed to be, how we should be, you know. And that's always the danger in talking about precepts, is that, you know, people tend to think, well, precepts are about how we're supposed to be or how we should be. And that's why, you know, calling the mindfulness trainings is really helpful. Because, oh, yes. Yeah. Here is a time when, you know, I'm really oppressing myself. I'm saying I'm not good enough. And that really is self-oppression. Yeah. It really is harmful to ourselves. And if it's harmful to ourselves, you know it's harmful to the people around us too. Yeah, so it's like, ah, there's a judging Buddha. Be just okay with that judging Buddha. Just be there with yourself. Thank you for coming. Thank you for practicing. And I will see you in 2 weeks. And I believe next week is a Dharma discussion on the precepts, on the mindfulness trainings.